Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar. Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com is with us for the rest of the program, talking all things Tennessee Titans. PK, good morning, my friend. How are you?
Hello, Nashville. I am well. And because I came a half an hour early, or an hour early, you could say, the next half hour, Joe is going to just speak in the voice of the Louisiana governor. That's what drew me in.
I don't know. I got someone telling me that I'm racist against Louisianans, and I'm like, oh, I didn't know that Louisianans was a particular race. It's own. And then he's like, yeah, they are their own breed of people. I'm like, well, is it actually
now
a different
being racist
breed?
To call them a breed.
Well, yeah.
The texter is a racist. I think you can perfectly there's nothing wrong with talking in the accent.
No, we do it all the time.
Louisiana governor, go.
Why do you never defend New Jerseyans when I do Kuharsky?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? I don't know if I can do I can't do it on demand
you
like
can,
that.
Just man. Think Foghorn Leghorn.
I know, every single sentence. I'll say, and then just say something. Yeah. It's got to
we'll
be weaved
just,
in.
Yeah,
I got to weave it in.
It.
Yeah, it's, right. I can't
too
really.
Too much pressure. The guy can't perform under pressure.
He's Katie, like Mason Kinsey.
Katie's told me that over and over.
He's
a low T alert.
He's the Mason Kinsey of the radio program. Just can't perform.
God, don't get me started.
Let's get Kuharsky teed up for a 28-minute rant here.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. Well, we got to start right
I figured
there.
I'd start there.
All right, so I read your piece Sunday, which I mostly enjoyed, PK. But you had a line in there. I don't have it in front of me, but you know the line. I'm paraphrasing. About this late – now, everybody has talked a lot, and I know Nick Holtz talked about it yesterday, like the you know the mix-up on the route, which looks like Kinsey just turned the wrong way to me, right? I mean, I think that's – or whatever. They had a miscommunication. That could have been a big play.
Kurt Warner put it on the coaching staff, but yeah, continue.
Okay. Really? That's interesting.
He did.
But you had a line about the later play where a catchable ball. Can you see? That was a terrible throw. He should not have caught it. And he got a paw on it. That's a terrible. If I'm Trey, who doesn't watch the games, and I only listen, and I read your piece, I'm like, oh, my God, Mason Kinsey had a ball right in his hands, perfect pass from Cam Warden. He dropped
leaning.
It. It was a terrible throw.
It wasn't a great throw, but he's leaning forward, and he gets a hand on
You're
it.
You're such a hater of Mason
first
Kinsey.
Off,
leave the kid
first
alone.
Off, I've come to like Mason Kinsey, but Mason Kinsey has no business still being around.
That's dumb,
listen,
too.
Mason
that's
Kinsey
dumb.
Needs to run through that ball. And he got a hand on it as it is. But run through the ball. All the Titans wide receivers. Run through the ball. And in terms of
watch
your defending Mason Kinsey.
Before
first
you
off,
write
and,
about
and on
it,
the other,
watch the play.
I watched the play. You I was at the game.
You watched it poorly.
And on the other play, the whole play is flowing right. The quarterback is flowing right. The Titans have the most unique design in history if Mason Kinsey is doing what he's supposed to do, where the whole play is flowing right and Mason Kinsey is running left. I examined the route. We talked to Holtz about it. I talked to somebody off the record about it. He's supposed to get right and get up the sideline, in which case he would have come back slightly left to catch that ball. He mangled it. He mangled it.
Okay, but see, these are – so you're adding context and stuff that I understand you didn't have it Sunday, but the way you wrote it was that it was just this catchable ball. It was not.
He's wide open.
Yeah, it was a bad throw.
And he gets – well, he got himself – it's a bad throw, but he also got himself all turned around.
But you didn't write
and
that.
And looked like an idiot because he was being an idiot. There are only so many things that can happen with that ball. If you're flowing
right – I really like this Mason Kinsey idiot. Really like
him. If you're flowing right into all of that space, you have to know how the ball might arrive there and that the fact that you turn around and face inside makes no sense to catch a ball that's going to be delivered there.
Here's what Kurt Warner had to say, because he was asked about that. I think Justin Mello.
Well, wait. So, but this is about the other one now.
No, this is about the one in space.
Yeah, the one in space. On
not,
the sideline.
Not the one
where
you think I'm completely wrong on. The one that
the one
you're
where he
defending
turned the wrong
him on
yeah.
unreasonably.
Yeah, so, I'm arguing about the later one, but that's fine. Okay, go ahead.
Kurt Warner said, for me, I have no idea why you run this concept with a rollout. No idea how the wide receiver is supposed to look back at the quarterback with that angle. This can be a really good play from the pocket, and wide receivers always look back to the inside and definitely squeeze the sideline more, but just no idea how the wide receiver can feasibly run this double move and see the quarterback if they want to keep him running down the field. I blame the concept, more than I blame the wide receiver or quarterback in any way.
Yeah, it's not the concept, though. He's supposed to get over earlier towards the sideline and then run up the hash marks and look up, and the ball would then be delivered over his left shoulder and he could lean back inside to get it. But he's got no effing clue what he's doing there. And to my broader point, Joe, and I ranted on this on my podcast after the game. I clipped it. I put it out. And I'll say it again. Mason Kinsey in 2020 arrived here. They said, hey, this guy's got some intriguing qualities. Let's look at him. All right, we like him a second year. Let's look at him. All right, we know what the ceiling of this guy is. We really like
him
in practice.
Great, so he's your ninth receiver.
We really like him. We really like him in practice.
All the issues the Titans have, and you're worried about who their 11th receiver
is. I'm worried about all of their issues. That's my job. You are a check-in guy, and you can be concerned only with the
primary. I'm worried about your issues, which you're putting on display for the public right now.
I'm concerned with all of the issues, and this is emblematic of their issues. Three regimes have said, yeah, we'll keep him again because he's a good practice player and he plays safety and receiver for the scout team. And if he's called up, yeah, okay. Instead of, all right, we've seen this guy for 2 years. We've seen this guy for 2 years. We know his ceiling. We've got to get somebody who's an inch better than this guy. And then examine
him.
That
would fix everything.
And then examine
the guy who only would play if like eight people get hurt. Oh, if you fix that, then all is well.
All right. Well, that's how you run your team. I'm going to run my team that I want a guy every year on the practice squad who's an inch better, who's got an inch better ceiling than the next guy. And I'm going to repeat that process. And you know what?
Get some starting offensive linemen. Yeah. Starting edge.
Don't do those things? I'm going to do all these things simultaneously.
You're just going to do it all.
I'm going to get a better offensive line.
You're going to fix the whole thing.
Well, I'm going to work on everything. You're being unreasonable.
Mason Kinsey is fine in the role he's in. He can come in. And yes, he is.
He's not. He came into that game, and on two key plays, he wasn't a professional receiver. I need the guy that comes in the game to be a professional receiver and not look like a dunce on the one play because he knows to get over to the sideline and turn and find the ball over his left shoulder. And then it would change the timing of the game, and I might have the chance to kick the game winning
field goal. By 2043, we'll get to the Titans fixing their ninth receiver. Then they'll finally get to that one. That's a huge issue.
Do they have to do things in chronological order? No, they can only get to the least important thing last. They can't simultaneously do a whole bunch of things.
Mason Kinsey is better at that role than some teams have in the same exact spot.
This is what some teams have, but why can't the Titans work on it and not for 6 years have the same guy?
Because they have more pressing issues that they're failing at.
Joe, this is crazy that you're saying they have more pressing issues. They can address multiple issues at the same time.
He's not
an
issue.
They can rebuild the offensive line.
This is what I'm saying to you.
And get a better practice squad receiver all at the same time.
What I'm saying to you is he's not an issue. He's absolutely fine in his role. There are teams that have that guy in the exact same spot who's not as good as him.
For 6 years? There are no six. I'll go through the league this year. There's no six-year practice squad receiver. Because teams try to get better at the spot, but not the Titans. Three regimes are like, that guy's fine. We don't need a better guy there.
He's fine.
As I said yesterday.
I want a team that tries to get better at every spot.
Let's just get Kinsey out of here, and PK's like,
if they had Bryce Oliver, they'd be fine.
They should be
Bryce Oliver would be fine.
That's right. But what you need is a contingency plan for when every guy goes down, and they don't have one. It's a symbol of their failure at depth. They don't get better depth. There have been like 13 receivers Nick Suss was counting up that have come and gone in a short span of
time.
That
list is pretty
impressive.
All
of them sucked. All of them.
Right.
But Kinsey's Joe's fine with it. Ah, keep Kinsey.
But Kinsey, that's the thing.
It's okay that you've missed 13 times. That doesn't matter.
Kinsey's fine.
I bet he doesn't play again.
Again, he's not supposed to play. I mean, he's not supposed to play. This is an extreme
situation. I
have
a dream of a football team where every guy's capable of playing if he's called on. You know who had that dream?
Oh, good.
You know
I have a dream. Oh, good.
Mike Vrabel.
He did.
Mike Vrabel had that
dream. Here we go.
And you know what? Mike Vrabel, when the time came, could put a damn guy on the football field, and he would almost, generally, be capable of producing what he was asked to do in a given week.
Wow. So, again, it takes 5 seconds for PK to put his nose up Vrabel's ass again. Amazing.
5 seconds. I mean, I can't
believe you're so
content. We
always wind back to that, don't we? We just always wind back to that.
So content.
Mason Kinsey got on the field when Vrabel was the coach.
He sure did.
And did a lot better than he did this week.
Well, that is true. He did not just completely run the wrong route
this week.
Mason
Kinsey,
get rid of Kinsey. If Mason, all is well.
If Mason Kinsey is on next year's team as a seventh-year practice squad / 53rd guy, that is a massive indictment of this team's unwillingness to let go of a sentimental guy who's good at practice and cannot help you in a game.
I got to say, PK's got a lot of support on the text line right now.
Yeah. I mean, I understand, like, people.
Well, now he understands.
No, shut up. I understand that people are going to yell at Mason Kinsey like Paul is. But, again, in his role, what he is, he is totally fine. You don't expect him to play. You don't want him to play. He only played because of an extreme situation. Who cares?
Be ready for extreme situations. That's part of being an NFL football team.
They're tanking anyway. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Let's get into that. I got a lot of thoughts on that one, too.
I got a lot of people supporting me on the text line, by the way, Robbie.
Mike McCoy has signed up for a tank in the most logical move ever. Mike McCoy has signed up for a tank.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We will get into the tanking conversation. We will get into Cam Ward, all that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
How do you plan to move forward at receiver?
Well, we're going to wait and see the health of the other guys, like we talked about, that got dinged also later in the game, and just it'll be by committee as of right now. And we're going to work through that. I mean, it's Monday, so we'll kind of work through those things. And we always talk about it's players. And a great example of that is the last drive offensively. It's players going down and making plays and guys stepping up. So that goes into the game planning week in and week out on what we think is with the personnel you have because of injuries. Your skilled players you have, maybe it's more multiple personnel groupings, things like that. But our job is to put the players in a position to be successful.
That was PK's favorite coach, Mike McCoy, interim head coach of the Tennessee Titans. Take your thoughts on the Titans. 615-737-1025.
Will you give me a little leeway,
can you
Robbie?
Mute your computer? Sure. Is that your computer?
Is that my computer?
Yeah.
Robbie, if you'll give me a little leeway.
Sure.
I know you're very good to work with when I sub for Rex Road.
Thank you.
Ian, tomorrow, no McCoy sound. I'm subbing for Rex Road tomorrow. No McCoy sound.
Okay. Yeah. None.
And as
you know what this means, right?
As a listener.
Every single intro.
Sometimes you just want the fans to listen every now and then. Not all of them get a chance.
I beg you, as a show, never play McCoy sound. But tomorrow, definitely no McCoy sound.
Okay.
I will mark that down.
As a contributor.
Okay.
Mike McCoy sound is the biggest friggin' waste time.
Just play it all the time. Like Viv Savage.
We'll take a segment off, like a bathroom break segment, to go have a smoke and a coffee.
Yeah. Bring
and
some
now
darts
the dulcet
for us
town, the dulcet tone of Mike McCoy saying nothing.
I did appreciate and enjoy the back and forth between you and McCoy and TD this week, trying to figure out what in the world it's going to take for them to maybe go for it on 4th and 2.
I think he'll never, ever do it. If he does it, if he goes for a 4th and 2, they could have a 17-yard loss, and I will stand up in the press box and applaud.
You get him today, right?
Yeah, which is the most worthless
thing. No, I don't think so, because you just asked him during that thing, like, well, what is their feedback for you? And he's like, well, we haven't talked about this game yet. Well, now.
That's true.
Well, yeah, okay.
So now you can – okay, what did they tell you? Are they happy with you playing like it's 1983?
He's so sick of me on this. I asked him a follow-up on the conservatism on Monday, and he gave me like the – we talked about it. We've already covered this. So I come back the third press conference in a row with a conservatism question.
Mike. But there's
he
new
might hang himself right there.
There's new information. There's new information. Okay, you've now talked to your superiors. What have they told you?
Yeah,
I think you're compelled to ask this question.
I'll take that. He'll probably say it's private and all of that. There is no way Mike Borgonzi is liking that.
I don't know how you could be saying,
Mike, go. And I think – here's what I envision. I swear, I'm not doing shtick here.
Okay.
I think they're telling him they want him to be aggressive on this stuff. I think he's going into the game thinking he's going to be aggressive on that stuff. And then I think he gets near that stuff, and his coaching DNA just won't allow it.
He can't do it.
I know they told me, but I just – punt! Punt team!
Has anyone ever punted from the plus 22?
I think on the third down play, he's thinking punt. He's setting up the punt.
Mike, have you ever thought about going for it on 4th and 2 from the 28? I was watching on the stream from the fox hunt and figured you should do it there, please.
On my way from the fox hunt to the tennis court before I went to ride the ponies. What a full day for her. Can you imagine?
I'm glad YouTube TV was back. I was able to watch the whole game.
I can't do the voice imitation, but man, oh, man.
So back to Mason Kinsey.
Good job, Mike.
That's good. I'm sitting here. Hold on. Let me set the scene. Over here at 102.5, the game, sitting in today. I'm sitting between Amy Adams Strunk and the Louisiana governor. It's a lovely conversation. Can I get either of you any more coffee?
Actually, I bet you they both fox hunt.
How much?
Right? They both probably good at
they
fox hunting.
They probably would have a together. Lot to talk about. Yeah,
he might be in her society of fox hunters.
She might ask him about the state of the Saints and the LSU search.
Maybe she wants to get into hiring Lane Kiffin.
She could get some tips about that. Bidding war.
Bidding war with Lane Kiffin.
Good shot, Jeff. That's a good shot.
See, Robbie more willing to cooperate with this bit than Joe, of course. Reluctant Joe, as I call him.
I'll say. That's all I got.
You were great when you did it. I just can't get it out of you.
So far, we've
crawfish etouffee.
So far with PK, we've gotten to ripping Mike McCoy, Mason Kinsey discussion for 12 minutes, and me making fun of Amy Adams Strunk.
Yeah,
you know what I want to do for Mike McCoy?
That's the state of the Tennessee Titans right there.
Here's what I'll do for Mike McCoy at the press conference today. I'll be John Cusack. No, not John Cusack. I'll be John Cusack.
Holding the thing?
Holding the beatbox above my head, and I'll have Rocky playing, "If I could change, and you could change, we all could change." About the fourth down conservative.
It's 4th and 2.
Oh, boy. All right.
Good
so on the Cam Ward front, I thought, and we mentioned this yesterday, check out Blake Bedingfield's piece at paulkuharski.com. It is must-read stuff after every Titans game. And he went through several things with Cam Ward, but I want to get your thoughts on all this. The production from Cam Ward is not good. I mean, he's on pace. We mentioned it yesterday, I think, for 10 touchdowns and 10 interceptions this year.
That he's on pace for 10 touchdowns sounds semi-miraculous.
Yeah. I mean, right now he's at 58.4%, 1,954 yards, 5.9 in attempt, 6 touchdowns, 6 picks. I understand everything around him is awful. So we all understand that. So I guess my question for both of you, what is fair to criticize specifically with Cam Ward? What is symptomatic maybe of the team around him? And if you're a Titans fan out there, and this question is more for them, have you lost any faith in him being worthy of the number one overall pick? Which, again, we're talking the number one overall pick here. PK, how do you take that one?
I think it's too early to lose faith. But I think, you're in that stage where he's getting game experience. You can't change the clock. But I wrote last week, the things that need to be fixed about him now that will have a real impact on some of the issues that are killing them, a lot of the short inaccuracy, which is really hard to get your head around, those fixes aren't coming until the offseason. You got to get a new head coach in there, new quarterback coach, new coordinator. They got to tell him what their philosophy and instruction book is on mechanics, and then they've got to get that to his quarterback guy, whose name I forget, TD's buddies with him, and he's got to go off and do that until he's allowed back in the facility to work on it, and then with the quarterback coach, and then, you know, February, March, April, May, June, July, that's 6 months of being drilled on that stuff for long sections of time, not 12-minute individual periods where 3 minutes of it really is about footwork, because then they're moving on to other elements of the quarterback broken-down game, right? It's just not enough time right now. And I talked to some former quarterbacks and some offensive coaches, and they said you can't fix it in season. There's not enough. You know, they're working on game plan and a whole bunch of other stuff that – It would be great if you could just strip down Wednesday's practice and have an all mechanics thing. But then you're not running the routes.
Yeah.
You know, and how can you get so in sync with Mason Kinsey like you were if you're sparing all that time for mechanics?
I guess my question, though, on that is like, okay, so last offseason weren't hours and hours and days and weeks and months devoted to the same mechanics?
Yeah, I mean, but
aren't there some universal mechanics here?
There are, but you're coming in also late on a draft year, so you don't have a full offseason. And I think it's fair to put into question how good Brian Callahan was at this. A, was he teaching the right stuff well? B, were his minions? There was a video last week put out with Hardegree standing there with the quarterbacks zigzagging through bags.
Yeah, we talked
throwing.
About that. Got
and,
ripped
and
by
Quincy
what's his
Avery.
Name again?
You know, Quincy Avery's not a NFL coach. I don't know if he wants to be, but he's considered one of these gurus. He's one of the guys that quarterbacks will go to in that January, February, March period, like a Jordan Palmer, and they will refine their techniques with him, and he thought it was crap, you know? And so, you know, I like Bo Hardegree, but I don't know how good a technical coach Bo Hardegree is of that, and that clip is illustrative of the way those periods go.
Yeah, but I also think that like that's the reality of probably once you get into this point of a season like this, the right. limits on the time, and some of it is just like, okay, let's do a drill to fill this time, right?
And these guys, these coaches, you know, human nature takes over. I think plenty of them are working hard. Denard Wilson is busting
his
ass.
He's kind of working some miracles out
with
here.
I think he's really making a statement about his future, wherever that is. I don't think there's any way that it's here. But, you know, you're also – I'm sure there are plenty of guys working their networks now about their next job. Well, you know, how many guys on this staff are going to be back?
Well, they are worse than I think any of us envisioned heading into the year, right? I mean, we were talking heading into the year about could they get to like five, six wins. So nobody ever thought they were going to be that good. But they're way worse than we thought they were going to be. And I would guess, barring some miracle here in the last half of the season where his numbers just skyrocket, and I don't know how they're going to do that based on where the roster is right now, Ward is going to end up with numbers at the end of the year. That had we told you that before the year, you would be like, really? That's not good.
All-time bad.
Yeah.
Amongst the all-time bad numbers for a rookie quarterback, for a 1.1 quarterback. Also, you have to give some consideration here, and I know some people will find it excuse-making or whatever. The Titans drew a ridiculously difficult schedule. Now, some of this is just the cycle, so they drew NFC West and AFC West. But also, for finishing in last place last year, they got the Patriots and the Browns.
Yep.
All right. Now, they might beat the Browns, but the Browns have a really good defense. The Patriots are like the darlings of the league, tied for the best record in the NFL. You know, you get the Chargers, who are hardly a cupcake, right? You know, you get, you're going to play Kansas City, who's, you know, everybody's expecting to resurrect themselves. You start with Denver, who is up there now. You get the Rams, who are just a very difficult team, you know. Your cupcakes were the Cardinals and the Raiders. You know, now should you be on par with the Raiders? Absolutely. But you get the Seahawks coming this weekend. I mean, that's brutal.
Well, you reacted to a tweet from Brian Summers, a listener that we love very much. I think his name is Brian Summers, about the comparing him and his path to other rookies, and it's the toughest, right? I mean, it's the toughest, I think, on two different counts. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Do you remember this? Yeah. Do you remember what you had for breakfast yesterday?
No.
Okay. but I mean, I guess we can find that. But like, it was striking. I mean, it's a very tough path relative to other.
Well, certainly, like if he's a guy that pans out, you'll look back and say, he took his lumps in his rookie season against a very difficult slate of defenses and, you know, survived it. And certainly in terms of quarterbacks that we've seen, and we've seen this a lot, you know, how many guys that had really rough starts are standing at the podium on Wednesdays sounding just beaten down and a shell of themselves? And he's not like that, you know. So I think there's, you know, if you're looking for kernels of good things about him, I think quarterback personality is a big deal. Like, you got to be able to last through some adversity. Some guys are saying there's some young guys who have no clue how to deal with adversity. They're not talking about Cam Ward.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that later in the show as well. We'll continue the conversation on Cam Ward. We will get to some of your calls and texts as well coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Paul Kuharsky with us from paulkuharsky.com. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up here in just about 10 minutes. Taking your thoughts on the Titans in the meantime. Let's welcome in our friend Ed in New Jersey on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ed, good morning.
Edward.
Thank you for calling in.
Good morning, fellas. So I am the minority on this take, and I'll let you guys beat me up, but let me state my case on why I think Simmons is a fraud, fraudulent leader, okay?
Look, you've been on this week, Ed. My goodness.
I have, and you know what? I am apathetic this year. I really am at a 1-9 team, but his comments piss me off. And let me just state my case before you rip me up. Look, I think he crossed the line when he went to the point where he got specific about what happened in Friday's practice about the false starts. I think we can all agree that he was pointing to one side of the ball. He was pointing either to the entire offense or, more specifically, the offensive line. Now, I've been told that I've been soft on my take. I encourage him to do everything he can privately to get on these guys, okay? But once you bring it public, there is no possible good that can come for that. And here's why. What if, in the course of the questions that were followed up by PK as a good reporter and all the other members, you guys asked the coach about it, you guys asked the Wards about it, you guys asked other players, Arden Key, there was multiple good stories that came from it. Fans were refreshed about the take. But what if Cam Ward were to come out and say, I don't agree with it. I think he should have kept it in-house, and I think he should have came to me about it. Now you've got a story about how the offense and defense is pitted against one another and how the team's fractured. And I don't want to hear the argument, well, what does it matter, the 1-9? What if he does this in week 3 next year when they're 1-1 and you got 5 false starts that cost you a week 3 game with a brand-new coaching staff? Or what if one of his mentors does it because they think it's okay to do it? To me, that's where I draw the line. I think he's a fraudulent. I really do. Okay, I mean, if I were Cam Ward, what's stopping another offensive player to say, well, I guess we didn't practice giving up a 3rd and 16 either in Friday's practice? To me, pointing fingers in publicly leads to great sound bites, great articles, great stories, fan interest, but that's not a leader. That's my take, and
thank you, Ed.
Let you guys kill me on it.
No, okay. Thank you, Ed. Appreciate the call.
I think you're projecting too much too far out. He didn't say anything that wasn't completely obvious. Here's the part that is a little bit fraudulent. He says there are 4 false starts on Friday, but there weren't.
Yeah.
There were 2, and one of them was by the practice squad.
Well, that's
imitating the Texans.
As much as
that's an exaggeration. To be accurate.
Yeah, I mean, I have to grip my teeth to give you a compliment, but that was good reporting on your part, and it does, because when Simmons said that, I completely assumed he was saying that Latham had a couple on Friday, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's totally, I mean, we talked about it whenever
Monday.
For a
long time on Monday.
Yeah, and again, saying we don't know, they don't know exactly, no one's being named here, but it sure sounds like it's just a constant thing we knew about Silver's report about Simmons getting after. But yeah, so that is like, it's like, wait a minute, you it's like a lot of people would digest it that way, and you basically threw fire or fuel on the fire of Latham.
Exaggerated to make your point.
Yeah, yep. So that is, but I think Ed's a little, because I don't know, you tell me, PK, I just feel like it was, a lot of it was heat of the moment right after the game, emotion, right?
Yeah, I'm waiting for somebody to do it. I think, I'm not going to say good leadership, bad leadership. I'm going to say, when you have a player, and the Titans haven't had many of these, but in their best days, they had players who, you know, were above fearing management, who could speak candidly about things. Sometimes it's healthy for somebody to say the obvious and get it out there. And it's obvious. They can't go three and out this much, and they can't false start. And to hear somebody other than Mike McCoy saying it, because Mike McCoy is saying it out of obligation, and it's obvious,
yeah.
To hear somebody say it, I think is refreshing, and I think it might be refreshing in the locker room for guys to say, I can't say it because I'm scared. But finally, somebody's saying the obvious here.
Well,
we've talked about it in-house, and it hasn't done bleep, so now maybe talking about it publicly will jolt some
guys. That's the
thing.
I mean, I think this is clearly been something that's been bothering Simmons for a while now, and it maybe not specifically false starts, but I mean, look, they've been talking all week about how some young guys aren't listening. We knew early in the year that the Mike Silver piece of Jeffrey Simmons stopping practice and getting after J.C. Latham. Like, how long have they been talking about this behind closed doors, not in the public, and nothing's changed? Well, if I'm Simmons and I'm doing that long enough and nothing changes, you're damn right I'm going public with it. Like, you're going to respond to this one way or the other. You're going to get it fixed one way or the other. So I have no problem with what Jeffrey Simmons did at all.
I think at a certain point, shame is a motivating factor. And J.C. Latham felt no shame after that game. None. He was very casual about it.
Okay, so is this – so you've got that. You've got Harden Key, the huff and puff. I mean, you're going to miss that guy. Jahad Ward then comes out and
– echoes
I know that you wrote something about this. I mean, is this – are we talking like basically Latham in particular as a guy who just – because, I mean, look, man, we've talked about it on the show this week, PK, but, like, I personally have found him to be super impressive, really smart guy, and, like, seems like he's got all the intangibles. You know he blew it away in the interviews, right? But, I mean, is he faltering in some way and not connecting with teammates and not responding the way he should to, like, tough love? I mean, is it about him? Is it about more than him?
I think it's first and foremost about him. I think it's partially about Sweat. But I think Latham...
The 2024
top two
picks.
Yeah. Thanks, Ran.
Not Chad. Chad is fine.
Well, thanks, Ran.
Leave your buddy Chad alone.
But what I wrote is, and from Latham's standpoint, I think it's his first real adversity, right? He went to IMG and he went to Alabama. How much adversity are you facing at IMG in Alabama? You're never 1-9, you know?
Yeah.
And then you get to the NFL, and Hottie Ward said, you know, you're facing it no matter what. Nick Holt said this too. You're facing it no matter what at the NFL, no matter who you are. And so if you don't look for every kind of outlet and opportunity you've got, and I don't think Arden Key and Ward are the best counselors for this. I mean, they've been on 11 teams between them. It's not like the league has said, I got to have this guy as a pillar of my team.
Right.
But they're producing on this team, and they're some of the best guys this team has. They know something, you know. And if you're blowing them off in terms of them trying to give you advice, even if you don't think their advice is great, you've got to manage it, massage it in some way, shape, or form that I don't think Latham's doing. And he just seems very ho-hum right now. And ho-hum on a bad team is bad formula.
But it's like, but you say ho-hum, but I mean, the stuff they're saying, I don't know. It's clearly something they talk about, clearly something bothering them. And I just wonder if it's more than just ho-hum. Well, I mean, you know, like, it's like,
by the way,
purely rejecting it.
Well, by the way, he's not been very good.
Right.
He's the seventh overall pick, and he's been bad.
Yeah, yeah. Drew Beatty, my film expert at PaulKuharski.com, I'll have a piece up about Latham's performance in this game, which went from, bench him, to, well, the numbers say he played pretty well, and Drew looked very carefully at him and doesn't think he played particularly well at all. So read
You're
that.
You're telling me that advanced read stats could be wrong. PFF grades could be bad? No? Wow. Who knew?
615-737-1025. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up
you
next.
Got one, Joe?
PK is I've with us.
One. You got one?
I well, we could. Yeah. Could. We could pivot. You never know.
Pivot.
PK is with us.
Pivot.
For the next hour and 15 minutes. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well,
Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Maybe someday you could be like me and get gout.
You can't stay away from shellfish, meat, and meat.
I just talked to Lane for 2 hours on the phone.
You ever thought about going for it on 4th and 2 from the 28?
Over here at 102.5 The Game, sitting in today, I'm sitting between Amy Adams Strunk and the Louisiana governor.
I tell you, Lane, we can do this, my friend.
I was watching on the stream from the fox hunt.
We look forward to seeing you.
You get the gout, man. It's just there.
These people are soft.
Which one of you has gout?
Congenital heart disease. More like congenital ha-ha-ha disease.
And it's getting bigger and bigger.
It is time for the Rex Rant, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. We have an audible. Paul Kuharsky will be ranting today.
Disease.
I think that's his favorite thing you've ever done, Joe. Good.
You come down here, I have some crawfish etouffee, you won't get a heart disease.
Paprika.
Paprika.
Yeah, not too much paprika. You might ruin it. I'm going to do the rant, and mine is a serious rant. And I'm stealing it.
Oh, good.
I'm stealing it from, is it Jeff Perlman, the author, whose most recent book is about Tupac. It's right up your alley.
Yeah, actually, I want to. It's Tupac, but yeah.
Tupac?
Tupac.
Who is that? Is he a rapper? Yeah. Oh, is that R&B music?
I'm providing some comedy early before I get seriously into this.
So Jeff Perlman, Tennessee alum, by the way.
Mike used to have a two-pack of cigarettes every day at the facility.
All right, we got some comedy gold, nice. And now I'll turn serious. Kenny Easley, the Hall of Fame safety, died in the last week. And what the NFL doesn't want you to know about Kenny Easley, his death, is kind of what led to his early death. He was traded from the Seahawks to the Cardinals in 1988. And when he had his physical, it revealed kidney failure and a need for a transplant. This is from Mike Sando, the great, he's now with The Athletic, your colleague.
Friend of the show.
When he had this physical, it revealed that his creatine toxicity level was 22. Anything above 10 was considered life-threatening, with normal readings falling between 0.5 and 1.7.
Wow.
Normal reading, 0.5 and 1.7. His was 22. Doctors were amazed that Easley had been able to play. Easley sued trainers, team doctors, and the manufacturer of Advil after his diagnosis. He alleged all parties contributed to the kidney damage he suffered from ingesting between 16 and 20 ibuprofen tablets daily for 3 months after an ankle injury in 1986. The suit was settled out of court. There is a segment of the NFL player population, my old friend Frank Wycheck included, who died from a fall but suffered from serious CTE. The NFL just wants these guys to quietly disappear. You go to NFL.com and their obituary of Kenny Easley does not tell you that he had major kidney problems that were a result of how doctors told him to deal with it. And the NFL, I've had this conversation with a couple people, wants these guys who are going to pass away in the next 10 or 15 years, some of them very young, to just peacefully go away. And once they're gone, then there will be fewer stories of NFL players who are dying as a result of miscalculations by doctors and CTE and stuff because they woke up and started not to offer these treatments. And I think it's the duty of fans and media to call attention every time there's a guy like this to remind everybody that the NFL is culpable in a lot of these deaths. So when you think of Kenny Easley, you see the Hall of Fame card, they do moments of silence or whatever that have happened. Remember that the NFL helped Kenny Easley die young.
Well said. I would say that that what the NFL does is what we see with, and you can take it to so many different, right? It's human individuals get trampled by the brand, by the corporation. I mean, that's right. That happens all over the place.
The big shield.
But what the NFL needs to do, and you know, there's stories out there of these guys not getting their money on time, enough money. You have the money to at least, it doesn't make it right, it doesn't fix it, but by God, you got to pay these people, and you've got to pay them on time. And I mean, it's absurd to me that it's not surprising that this is how they conduct themselves at all. But you can make this somewhat right, at least by doing the right thing by them. And it, by all accounts, you know, they're dragging their feet on that stuff and not giving them enough, and that's disgusting.
And he took a settlement, so the number's good enough that he was willing to be quiet about what the number was. But how about the number's so good that you're proud to say what the number is? Hey, we tried our best to take care of this guy and his family who we know didn't get what he deserved.
Yeah, well, and they, you know, this is not just an NFL thing, like you said, Joe, but it's just, let's not draw attention to it and just hope it goes away. That's what it is with the NFL.
Yeah.
And to your point, PK, like they have, it's a different era. I mean, go back and watch some of the games in the 80s and the early 90s. It's not the same football that's out there right now. And some of that's good. Some of that, I know fans think is bad, but you're going to see, I think, less and less of this moving forward with the changes that they have made.
Hopefully.
But there are a lot of people in the meantime that this is affecting.
Yeah, and they talk out of both sides of their mouth, right? They've cleaned up the game for certain hits and certain stuff.
Yeah.
At the same time, they're dying to add an 18th game.
Right,
exactly.
Which compounds it.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, player safety. Okay, so we take out some of these hits, but yeah, play more football. I mean, the hits, the sub-concussive hits have not changed. You know, the blindside blocks, all that stuff, you had to get it out of there. The sub-concussive hits that offensive linemen, defensive linemen take over
up.
Those aren't any different.
Yep.
And at some point, you know, there may be a reckoning there. I mean, look, I hope this stuff is working, you know, but, are we ever going to get to the point where, you know, we could diagnose someone for being predisposed? I think that's part of it too, right? Like some people obviously get severely affected by the same things that other people seem to have no issues with, right?
And a lot of these guys will take the trade-off. You know, I did a big story back at the Tennessee.
Sure, I mean,
Kevin Wise said, sure, I know what I'm doing to myself, and I'm setting up my family for generations and generations and generations, and I'm willing to make that trade-off. And I think almost every guy in the NFL, striving to make money or making sufficient money, will say that.
Sure.
You know, I kind of have it on my calendar. Antoine Odom, who was a decent pass rusher, you know, one of those Jim Washburn projects, told me that. He said, when I'm 50, you know, we'll see how I feel, but I'm willing to take the trade-off. And I kind of have it. Like, I think Antoine Odom is 43. But in 7 years, I would love to go sit down with Antoine Odom and kind of revisit what he said when he was 28.
We got to one more hour with PK coming up next. A lot more on the Titans to get into with him. We'll take your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Tonight on Totally Hits 93.3, catch MTSU men's basketball. They're taking on Michigan at 5:30. Coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.